Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on property, the subject of property, right after this. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the world's most ignorant. Today, most Americans feel powerless to resist the evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, our privacy, and our property by these powerful government agencies, multinational corporations, the lobbies, and the news media. But you know, we don't have to remain helpless. The institution which was designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights is called the judicial power. Our courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, our liberties, and our property. It's not in the Congress, and it's not in our political process. Now, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination, for instance, is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights, not to one who is indifferent thereto? And that's because it's a fighting clause, and its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat. It cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor, and it's valid only when insisted upon by a belligerent claimant in person. So says U.S. versus Johnson. That's why I contend that we should listen more to our judges and less to our politicians and lawyers. Now, listen to what that judge said in that statement. He said, "Your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. They have to be claimed by you, the belligerent claimant in person." Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the laws in general. And it's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. That number again, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. All right, last time we were talking about this thing of the subject of property, and we came up to the subject of House Joint Resolution 192. House Joint Resolution 192. After the enactment of the Federal Reserve Act back in 1913, on June 5th, 1933, Congress enacted a House Joint Resolution. Later, it was put into the form of a statute. But it implemented that first plank to the Communist Manifesto. Remember, this first plank calls for the abolition of property and land and the application of all rent of land to public purpose. So last time we were talking about when was that implemented in the United States. Up until 1933, we Americans practiced the Ten Commandment model of economics. Franklin Roosevelt introduced the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto model, and he began early on in his first administration. Now remember, he was inaugurated president on March 5th, 1933. So by June 5th, we have a statute coming into play, or a new law, which calls for a resolution that, whereas the holding or dealing in gold affect the public interest and are therefore subject to proper regulation and restriction, and whereas the existing emergency, that's the Great Depression now, has disclosed that provisions of obligations which purport to give the obligee a right to require payment in gold or a particular kind of coin or currency are inconsistent with the declared policy of Congress in the payment of debts. This resolution declared that any obligation requiring payment in gold or particular kind of coin or currency or in an amount in money of the United States measured thereby is declared to be against public policy. Congress outlawed the payment of debt. I know it sounds a little bizarre. Why would they want to do that? Well, they said because there's this Great Depression upon us. We have unemployment and we have these banks, you know, that are becoming insolvent and going broke, and government needs to get involved in this and solve this problem. Now, I can't point to any problem that's ever come upon humankind that's ever been solved by government. If you know of one, send it to me, would you? What in the hell has government ever done that could solve a problem? They went on to say that every obligation heretofore hereafter incurred shall be discharged upon payment dollar for dollar in any coin or currency which at the time of payment is legal tender for public and private debts. Now, if you'll take a look at your Federal Reserve notes today, it says this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. Now, when you go to the store and you want to buy a pack of cigarettes, you say, well, I went to the store and I bought a pack of cigarettes. How'd you pay for it? Well, I paid for it with a $20 bill. So we use the word paid, but did you really pay for that pack of cigarettes? Pay? You paid your phone bill, you paid your power bill, you paid your mortgage this month. How'd you pay that? Now, remember, we've been talking about houses and automobiles. You know, we like to point with pride and we say, this is my house, and my car, it's my child, my wife, my bicycle. And I've simply sowed some seeds of doubt and asked you the question, is that true? Well, based upon the definition of the word property, remember, it's the sole and despotic use and the ability to dispose of it any way you want to, but you can't dispose of your house, your children, your wife, your car, any way you want to. In fact, you can't even use them any way you want to. So by every measure of the definition of property, houses, cars, wives, children, and chattels are not property in the lives of everyday Americans today. And there was a point in time when they were property, but not after June 5th, 1933. That's the magic date right there. Now, in a court case called Stanek versus White, cited at 172 Minnesota 390, it's 172 Minnesota 390, the court in that case pretty well explains to us what happened. It's obfuscated. It's not right out there in plain language like we'd like to see it done. But you know, criminals and co-conspirators, deceivers, con artists, scammers, they don't come out and tell us how they're lying to us and defrauding us. You know, if somebody came up to you and said, here, let me sell you this siding that's going to peel off of your house in about 2 years. It's a total fraud. It isn't worth the paper that I'm putting on here, but I want you to pay me three times more than it's worth because I'm a con man. You wouldn't buy it. In order to buy a swindle, to buy a con, it has to look good. It has to look as good as or better than the original. That's what a counterfeit is. And they're sure as hell not going to tell you what they're doing to you. That doesn't happen until years later when we find out through our experience when the siding peels off of the house and we find out we've been lied to, snookered, and cheated, and the thief is long gone. And that's what happened here. The first plank to the Communist Manifesto was foisted off on us on June 5th, 1933 in the form of House Joint Resolution 192 in the form of, gee, we just want to help. I'm from the government. I want to help you with this depression. Kind of like Social Security. Well, the court said that there is a clear distinction between the words payment and discharge. Payment and discharge. You got to write that down. If you got a pen and you're curious, you walk into the store and you buy something, you say, well, I paid for it. I don't think so. It is possible to pay for something, but most commonly, we don't pay for it, we discharge it, which is a similar word in a bankruptcy. You see, in a bankruptcy, you go in, you file, you say, I can't pay my debts. The bankruptcy court doesn't pay those creditors. It discharges you from the obligation to pay them. So a bankruptcy is a discharge. Well, isn't that a revolting development? Payment, discharge, my house, my car, my wife, my children, my big screen TV. So when we looked at little Georgie last night, giving a 3-to-5 card to Harry Connick, we found out that, wait a minute, that's a discharge in equity. And because it's a discharge rather than a payment, the owner becomes the issuer of the note. Kind of bizarre. He's not in possession of the property, and yet he becomes the owner under the Uniform Commercial Code. So we looked at Walt Mann. Walt Mann explained it, and it's called superior title. Law merchant, superior title, comes under the Uniform Commercial Code. Now, we used to have a system of law here in the United States called the common law in which we practice the Ten Commandment model predicated upon Article 1, Section 10 of our Constitution, which says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Congress comes along in 1933 and says, oh, no, that's a mistake, and we're going to fix that. It's against public policy. Now, can Congress overturn a constitutional provision? Well, yeah, they could. You can't just repeal the Constitution with a statute, but you can create a statute and induce people to behave or practice a practice or contract into an agreement in which the Constitution doesn't apply. Contract law takes its place. Now, that's what happened here. The taking of our gold in 1933 didn't have anything to do with the Great Depression. It had to do with the first step in taxing the middle class with an income tax. Social Security didn't have anything to do with retirement and the concern of government bureaucrats with the plight of America's poor. It had to do with the implementation of a contract to tie you in contractually to the income tax so that we could tax you. There's only two ways to do that. Either one, we have to have a constitutional amendment, which doesn't stand a snowball's chance in hell of passage in the middle of the Depression. What are you going to do? Come out and say, look, we've got this Great Depression, and now we want to raise your taxes. We're not taxing you now, so we want to tax the middle class? That isn't going to fly. So the logical conclusion, then, if you're a lawyer and you want to accomplish this goal, then we have to persuade Americans to join some kind of a scheme, some kind of a contractual organization or obligation in which they will contract into this tax. Now, keeping in mind, you people weren't paying an income tax, you carpenters, plumbers, electricians, and wage earners, in 1930. It didn't start until 1942 with the Victory Tax Act. But the implementing regulations were accomplished on August 15, 1935. With the Social Security Act. And remember, your Social Security number is your taxpayer identification number. So what we wanted to do here, we wanted to tax you, but we couldn't get a constitutional amendment. And so we needed another plan. And so here's the way that plan worked. The Congress is not made up of a bunch of dummies now. And so they came on the scene and they said, okay, now here's what we want to do here. Here's the way we want to accomplish this goal. Back in 1933, Congress and the politicians took our gold and silver coin away from us. Because they knew, and they knew full well, that in order to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away their gold and silver coin in order to take away the people's right to property and to destroy those property rights. To implement the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, we first of all have to destroy your property rights. Without property, you cannot have liberty. All of your liberties and your rights depend upon property. Now, here's what this story is all about when we reduce it to legalese. Let me see if I can explain this one. The court said there's a distinction between a debt discharged and a debt paid. There's a distinction between a debt discharged and a debt paid. There's a difference between walking in and buying the pack of cigarettes with daddy's note and walking in and paying for it with a gold or silver coin. Now, I know you went to public school and you're saying to yourself, look, I walk into the store, I put down money on the counter. I don't care whether it's gold, silver, paper, a check, a credit card, or something else. What I'm concerned with is do I get what I want, and I got what I want, and I walked out the door. That's pretty shallow thinking. It's true you've accomplished the selfish end, I got what I wanted. But you paid a whole lot more than the price of the cigarettes when you did that, Bobby. You had to give up your property rights. You don't own the pack of cigarettes. Well, I smoked them all, so there, ha-ha. What are you going to do, make me give back the smoke? Oh, no, no, Bobby. No, I'm going to take you into captivity. I'm going to take you into bond servitude. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to create an economy where you can't own your car, you can't own your wife, your children, and I'm going to tax you. I'm going to take 17 to 42% of everything you create and produce, and I'm going to call that an income tax. Then I'm going to take 16% of everything you create and produce, and I'm going to call that the Social Security tax. Then I'm going to wrap 12 other taxes around you, taxes like excise taxes, luxury taxes, hidden taxes. And then I'm going to take a total of 74% of everything you create and produce. I'm going to reduce you to a blubbering mass of protoplasm totally dependent upon me. That's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to use your ignorance, your vanity, your jealousy, your lust, your greed, and your fear against you. And I'm going to take you into captivity. How do you like that, Bob? So the court tells us now that there's a distinction between a debt discharged and a debt paid. Now, when a debt is discharged, the debt continues to exist, even though it has been divested of its character as a legal obligation during the operation of the discharge. Something of the original vitality of the debt continues to exist. The debt which continues to exist may be transferred to somebody else, even though that somebody else takes it subject to its disability, which is incident to this discharge. Now, the fact that it carries something which may be a consideration for a new promise to pay, so as to make an otherwise worthless promise a legal obligation, it makes the subject of transfer by assignment. It is the subject of transfer by assignment. Now, there's a real piece of property here called a pack of cigarettes, and the guy in the store owns it. Well, the guy in the store actually doesn't own it either because he didn't pay for it. He discharged his obligation to his supplier with that same Federal Reserve note. Now, remember, little Georgie goes into Harry Connick's store. Harry gives him the bread and milk. Little Georgie walks out. He hasn't paid for the bread and milk. Something of the original vitality of the debt continues to exist, even though little Georgie, as far as he's concerned, has paid for it. He hasn't stolen this bread and milk. Harry has voluntarily alienated himself from the bread and milk. Little Georgie's walking up the street when we ask our legal question, who owns the bread and milk? And the answer is Daddy, under the Uniform Commercial Code, under the Law of Bills and Notes, under the first plank to the Communist Manifesto, which we have now implemented in place of Article 1, Section 10. Isn't that just special? Now, there's a little more to the story. It is clear that as a result of House Joint Resolution 192, and from that day forward, June 5, 1933, no one has been able to pay a debt. All they can do is transfer the debt. They can transfer the debt. They can tender it. So the debt then becomes perpetual. Now, take a look at the debt structure of the United States. From $2 billion in 1930 to $100 trillion today. Not only are you in debt, your debts continue to expand. You can't pay them now. You don't have the ability to even service the interest on these debts. You're totally insolvent. That's not an accident. These politicians and these businesses have cunningly coerced the American people, and you Canadians and Australians and everybody else in the world, to abandon thou shalt not steal and you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Your preachers and your religious people in the frocks have joined into the conspiracy and told you, well, you don't have to practice these laws of God. You don't have to practice this Old Testament. Why, it's nailed to the cross with Jesus. Well, okay. Now take a look at your position in 1930. Now take a look at your position today. And remember that you are the proximate cause of your own injury. You wanted to correct God's mistake. And you know, God's a dummy. I don't deny it. He's not tuned into stocks and bonds. He's not tuned into Federal Reserve notes and commercial paper and all the profits that go along with it. But he gave you a law, and he told you now, and practice my law, and I'll give you all these benefits. If you don't practice this law, then there's going to be a consequence. So we decided that we wanted to deviate from just weights and balances, gold and silver. We wanted to adopt banking. We wanted to adopt commercial paper, Federal Reserve notes, mortgages, practice interest and usury, which we were told not to do. Okay, now you've got a result. How do you like it? If you like the result, stick with it. If you don't like the result, listen up, because you may want to opt out at some point in time. This suspension of the gold standard and prohibition against paying debts removed the substance that common law operates upon, and it created a void as far as the law is concerned. The substance was replaced with a public national credit system where debt is called money. The Federal Reserve calls it monetized debt. It's also known as fiat currency, over which the only jurisdiction is Admiralty and Maritime. Now, Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 prohibits the states from making anything but gold and silver coin as a payment and payment of debts, or a tender and payment of debt. But this article does not contain an absolute prohibition against the states making something else a tender in transfer of debt. Transfer in place of payment. Now, boys and girls, every one of these words has a definition, it has a meaning, it has an outcome. Americans have been subjected to a public school system in which they cannot speak English any longer. They speak gutter vernacular. And when you listen to people, even people in college, they will use terms like, hey man, like that's really cool. That's called gutter vernacular. These people cannot speak, they cannot communicate. That's not an accident. You've been sent to these public institutions to dumb you down. And the administrators of these public institutions have succeeded beyond their wildest expectations. Now, meanwhile, back on the farm, there is reality. And the reality in our judicial system comes to the fore. And you're being taxed. I mean, that's reality. And it's a heavy progressive income tax. When you add Social Security with the lowest income tax payment, 17% and 16%, those two taxes take one-third of everything you create and produce, partner. Nobody was doing that to you in 1930 or 1920 or 1840. All right, now, House Joint Resolution 192 prohibits payment of debt, and it substitutes in its place a discharge of an obligation, thereby not only subverting but totally bypassing the absolute prohibition so carefully engineered into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10. Today, there is nothing for Article 1, Section 10 to operate upon, just as there is nothing for common law to operate upon. Perpetual debt, bills, notes, checks, and credits all fall within a totally different jurisdiction than that contemplated by Article 1, Section 10, our Constitution, our common law, the Ten Commandment model. And that jurisdiction belongs exclusively to the law of admiralty and maritime. Now, it's easy to see how bills as plenty as oak leaves polluted the laws after the War for Independence, as described by Pelletiah Webster. House Joint Resolution 192 placed every person who deals in the public national credit in the legal position of a merchant. And the only jurisdiction over any controversy involving this subject matter is called Admiralty and Maritime. That's the Uniform Commercial Code. Now, obviously, if we cannot pay our debts at law, then we are also benefiting from limited liability. Limited liability is called insurance under the Limited Liability Act when we use this credit. And that's called marine insurance. Can you say Barack Obamacare? National health care insurance, limited liability, to be administered, by the way, by the IRS. Now, this definition of liability and insure will help demonstrate this fact. In analyzing these definitions, keep in mind the distinction between payment and discharge. Remember that. Write it down. Payment versus discharge. When you pay a debt, you extinguish the debt. It's terminated. It's paid. It no longer exists. There is a clear distinction between a debt that's discharged and a debt that's been paid. When a debt is discharged, it is not extinguished. It continues to exist. When a debt is discharged, it changes its character. A debt paid is extinguished. It's terminated. It's absolved. It's wiped out. It's forgiven. But when a debt is discharged, it continues to exist. And a discharge then transfers the debt to the next person, like the old maid in a card game. The person who accepts the discharge agrees that there's a disability, all right. And he accepts that disability as a condition of the discharge for the profit that he seeks to make. This disability that he accepts is the loss of his property, the loss of his property right in both the money and the product or the service. He accepts this disability voluntarily, alienating himself from his property in exchange for the profit that he hopes to make on the transaction. So going back to little Georgie here with Harry Connick, Harry Connick is a businessman and he hopes to make a profit. He gives the bread and milk and accepts the note. There's a disability. He loses his property and he can never recover it. He can sue on the note. He's entitled to payment. But he doesn't own the property and he can't sue and get the property back. He's alienated himself from it. Daddy becomes the owner. So the Federal Reserve, the bankers, God love them, you know, the bankers that you just bailed out for $29.1 trillion, remember, you just bailed them out and took on all their debts. God love you taxpayers. Well, that's what they did to you. Now, you're in hopes of making a profit off of this. You're gonna, you know, you paid 15 cents or 20 cents for the bread and milk, and you want to sell it for 35. You want to make a 15-cent profit. But in the process, you have to give up your property rights. You have to submit to regulation, control. Did you want to give up your freedom for 15 cents? You want to give up your property for 15 cents? You want to give up your rights for 15 cents? Well, that's what you have to do when you become a merchant, when you act in commerce. In the Bible, it's called Canaanite trafficking. Now, this definition of liability and insure will help demonstrate this fact. Liability. The word is a broad term. It's been defined to mean all character of debts and obligations, any kind of debt or liability, either absolute or contingent, express or implied. Condition which creates a duty to perform, specific performance, an act immediately or in the future, due to pay money or to perform some other service. The state of being bound or obligated in law or justice to do, pay, or make good something. Now, insure means to engage, to indemnify a person against pecuniary loss from specified perils or possible liability. And the following questions demand an answer. First, who do you suppose took possession of the treasury of the state of Pennsylvania on June 5, 1933, the moment that House Joint Resolution 192 made it impossible for the state of Pennsylvania to pay its debts? It was the Federal Reserve. Two, since land titles are allodial in Pennsylvania, what was the state assembly's authority and jurisdiction to pledge these allodiums to the Federal Reserve as security for loan contracts from the federal government? It was a usurpation of the property rights of the people. I mean, after all, if we can take away your gold, when you people walked up to the windows in 1933 and passed your gold over and accepted paper, and then you went out into the marketplace and you started buying, selling, and trading with paper, son, you gave up your property rights. Three, if the individual citizens of Pennsylvania were sovereign under the common law, what was the authority and jurisdiction of the state assembly to pledge their labor to the Federal Reserve pool? They got it by contract. You have to get permission. They have to get the people to voluntarily alienate themselves from their property. When you go down to sign up for Social Security, write this down. Here's where you'll find it in the U.S. Code. It's Title 42, Section 301 through 335. Go read your contract, boys and girls. You have pledged all of your labor for all of your life to the United States of America. The United States, in return, pledges to furnish all of your necessaries under 108 benefits pursuant to Social Security. Boys and girls, government doesn't have anything to give you until they first take it away from you. So they come along to you, they came to you, and they said, give us all of your labor for all of your life, and we will give you all of these benefits after you first give it to us so that we can buy it and give it back to you, and then we'll take the administrative costs, and in the meantime, we will have total control over your lives through regulation, heavy progressive income tax, and the police power of the state. Gotcha. Gotcha. Hey, let me give you a reminder here at the halfway point. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on Compact Disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto our archives page and download that free general law CD package. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about the subject of property. Property and property rights. Listen to this. The Constitution of the United States is a contract. It is an agreement. It's an agreement that's made among and between the states. And it was adopted in a benign form. It didn't apply to, nor did it prejudice, any state citizen in any way. That made it impossible for the states themselves and their creation, the United States of America Incorporated, in its governmental, proprietary, or other capacity, to tax, assess, or take property from, or otherwise regulate the individual citizen as a matter of jurisdiction. They simply did not have that power. Now, this left the individual citizen then, or the free inhabitant, free. But it also cut off expected revenues, which the conspirators among our founding fathers planned to get out of the pockets of the people, as well as their labor, their performance, and especially their life's credit. Now, back in 1857, a case came down called Dred Scott v. Sanford, cited at 9 Howe 393, and like authority provide in effect that the state citizen is immune to any and all governmental attacks and procedure absent contract. Contract. Oftentimes, I will hear people, when they come into the classroom, they will spout off a lot of tax protest literature or information that they've picked up over the years, and they will say, there's nowhere or no place in Title 26, for instance, that delineates the income tax or tells us that we have to pay an income tax. And I tell them, or I usually ask the question, have you ever read all of Title 26? And I have yet to have anybody walk into this classroom and say, yes, I have read all of 26, and I couldn't find any place in there that required that I pay an income tax. Not a one. Now, I'm a law school instructor, and I want to tell you that I have never read all of Title 26. But I would not tell you that there's nowhere or no place in Title 26 which delineates the need or requirement for you to pay an income tax. It's what we call in law assuming facts, not in evidence. I don't know that because I didn't read the chapter, so how would I know? Now, there are some people who have claimed that they read it or have purported to have read Title 26. Some of those people claim that they're justices on the Supreme Court of the United States. They have consistently, over the past 75 years, told me and you and everybody else that wants to listen that the income tax is not unconstitutional. They're pretty crafty, the Supreme Court justices are. They don't say something is constitutional. They say it is not unconstitutional. You see, if it were constitutional, then it would be provided for in the Constitution. But if it's not provided for in the Constitution, that does not make it unconstitutional. So the court very craftily uses the words, we find that this act is not unconstitutional. And the income tax, which is the second plank, by the way, to the Communist Manifesto, which calls for a heavy, progressive, or graduated income tax. Now remember, your Communist Manifesto calls for the abolition of property and land and application of all rent of land to public purposes. That was enacted in 1933. This heavy, progressive, or graduated income tax was imposed in May of 1942. It's called the Victory Tax Act. And I know you thought it was 1913. Well, you're wrong again, and it won't be the last time. Victory Tax Act, 1942. Heavy progressive income tax. Now, we had an income tax, and then we had a progressive variety, but it didn't apply to everybody. It wasn't universal. It only applied to people with income. Now, we're faced with, everybody's dealing with fiat currency and the national public debt, the national public economy. And so now they have expanded it until it now applies to all of us. Yep, me too. Now, there's an interesting case comes down here, just in case you thought that the income tax now applies to everybody. It only applies to people with income. And let me show you that. It's kind of an odd case, and it was decided back about 1928, as I recall. And it's called Stewart versus Chinese Chamber of Commerce. Why don't you write this down? You'll love it. Stewart, S-T-U-A-R-T, versus Chinese Chamber of Commerce, 168 Fed 2nd, 709. And can you get that down? 168 F2D, 709. Now, on page 712, here's the answer to the riddle. The revenue laws are a code or system in regulation of tax assessment and collection. They relate to taxpayers and not to non-taxpayers. No procedure is prescribed for non-taxpayers, and no attempt is made to annul any of their rights and remedies in due course of law. With them, Congress does not assume to deal, and they are neither of the subject nor of the object of the revenue laws. Boys and girls, there's some people out there called non-taxpayers. Congress doesn't assume to deal with them. You ever seen one? These non-taxpayers, have you ever noticed the way they dress so strangely with long flowing robes and turbans on their heads and sandals? Have you ever seen a non-taxpayer? Have you ever heard of such a thing? Could you recognize one if he came up and slapped your face? Could you say, oh my God, that was one of those non-taxpayers. He just slapped me. Huh? I just wanted to point out to you, there are some out there. We can identify these non-taxpayers, but they don't wear long flowing robes, turbans, and sandals. They just look like everybody else, but they're pretty peculiar people, let me tell you that. They're really peculiar. Now remember, we Americans are practitioners of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, have been since the Roosevelt years. Roosevelt, Franklin D. Roosevelt, that's the fellow who introduced, that's the fellow who changed the 10 commandment model to the 10 plank model. He started June 5th, 1933. He didn't do it all in 1 week. But by the time he left office, dead, feet first, he had implemented all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. He didn't start the process. We had started the communist process long before Franklin Roosevelt. But Franklin Roosevelt is the guy that implemented it, put it into operation, and made it work. So let's give credit where credit's due. Stand up, give Franklin D. Roosevelt a big hand. Now, we've had a couple of other guys come along on the scene, and I got to give credit, you know, to Bill Clinton. He was good. He was good, really. And to Barack Obama. I got to tell you, Barack Obama has accomplished what Franklin D. Roosevelt, Harry Truman, and Bill Clinton combined couldn't do. He gave you national socialized medicine. Now that is an accomplishment. And I got to tell you, that is the implementation of the last nail in the coffin of the United States of America. The last nail. That was a good one. Now the people of America wanted it, and they're all co-conspirators. Or as we would say in law, the people of America are, in fact, the proximate cause of their own injury. They've done it to themselves. When America is taken into national captivity, when the last nail closes the lid permanently, it will not have been done by the Russian army or by the Chinese proletariat. It's going to be 100% accomplished by the people of America. We did it to ourselves. Tuck it away in your heart. Now, some of us, you know, some of us are sitting here saying, hey, I don't like this program. I would kind of like to go back to the Ten Commandment model. I'd kind of like to get off this train. But it's going so damn fast, it's hard to get off without getting hurt. Well, we'll talk about getting off this train as we progress along. But first of all, I wanted to show you what you were riding on. And this is quite a train. Further complicating things against us, the tightening of this noose around our collective and several necks, is the fact that since law merchant paper titles cover all once corporate made or corporate held property, government in reality owns all of the property, including our homes, our cars, our shorts, and the food that we eat. And they own it through the Federal Reserve, who issues the notes. It's Congress that created this monster called the Federal Reserve. The president appoints the chairman, Ben Bernanke. Congress appoints all of the Fed governors. Okay, so we've approved this. We participate in it every day. You've got a checking account, a credit card. You participate in banking every time you get paid. You go down and cash your paycheck. In law, we call this an accessory, before and after the fact. Americans, and I suspect you Canadians and Australians and everybody else in the world, you're all complicit in this criminal activity. These unjust weights and balances, these paper dollars, are crimes. They're criminal. They violate the law of God. I often wonder, after the executives of Goldman Sachs, who have deliberately gone out, not just Goldman, it's Bank of America and J.P. Morgan and Citigroup and the rest, but all of you bankers out there, you went out into the marketplace and you sold these CDOs and mortgages, and you knew that they were no good. And then you went to the ratings agencies and bribed them. And you bankers and you professionals in the ratings agencies were complicit in this fraud. And you told these people, all these investors, that these were good. They were AAA, when in fact they were junk bonds. And you went out and sold them and bankrupted the world. Let me ask you a question. Do you people, honest to God, believe that you can get away with that crime? Honest to God. Now, do you think that the creator of the universe, God Almighty himself, is going to sit on his ass and watch you guys get away with that? Do you believe that? Well, not from what I've been reading. There's a bumper sticker I saw the other day. It said Jesus is coming back and he's mad as hell. There's a day of reckoning coming here, boys and girls. If you're sitting there on a mortgage and your house has been foreclosed on, remember, vengeance is mine, says the Eternal. I will repay. And there's a neat statement in here. I got to read this one to you, especially all you bankers out there. And you preachers, God, I love this one for the preachers. It's over here in Matthew 7:22. Do you preachers out there who have been complicit and co-conspirators in these unjust weights and balances and this usury and interest, these crimes prohibited by God, honest to God, do you preachers think that you're going to get away with this crime? In Matthew 7:21, Jesus made this statement. He said, not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven. Many will say unto me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, and in your name have cast out devils? And in your name done many wonderful works? Haven't we fed Skid Row bums and winos at the soup kitchens on Skid Row and preached Jesus? In verse 23 he says, and then I will profess unto them, all of you Billy Grahams and Oral Roberts and Jerry Falwells, you pulpit parrots, I never knew you. Depart from me, you that work iniquity. Now that's the pulpit parrots. In Luke 11:57-54, and Jesus had something more to say about preachers and lawyers. I'll point this out. Jesus never had a good word for a banker, a preacher, or a lawyer. If that's your profession in life, you might want to consider a change, a strategic change. I'm not telling you to do it. I'm just suggesting. It's in Luke 11:37-54. But Moses gave us a little piece to the puzzle over here. It's about Deuteronomy chapter, I don't know, 7, something like that. Let me see if I can find it. Oh, here it is. Chapter 7. Here it is. Deuteronomy chapter 7. Here's the creator of the universe. He says, know therefore that the Lord your God, he is God, the faithful God, which keeps covenant and mercy with them that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations. People that practice the Ten Commandment model, he says, I will keep my covenant, I will keep my word with you for 1,000 generations. Now, a generation is 40 years, so 1,000 generations is 40,000 years. Or as they say down here, it's a fur piece. Verse 10, he says, and repayeth them that hate him to their face, to destroy them, and he will not be slack to him that hates him. He will repay him to his face. So all you preachers and lawyers and bankers out there, get ready. The creator of the universe says that when he does it, he's not going to do it in secret. He's going to do it to you face to face, eyeball to eyeball. I just thought I'd throw that one in there. I always liked justice. That's why I'm in the legal business. He says, you shall therefore keep the commandments and keep the statutes and the judgments which I command you this day to do them. Which, as my old daddy used to say, sit down, shut up, and do what you're told. Now, here in America, we don't do that very well. We don't sit down, we don't shut up, we don't do what we're told. And we're constantly trying to fix God's mistakes. Well, okay, I don't want to get in the way of your happiness and success. The income tax is both a public and a private tax from the supposed governmental view. The government is taxing us on the grant of citizenship. Citizenship is a crime also. Because the grant itself and the intangible property rights residing therein, and for a third proposition, they are taxing us privately in the nature of a rental or like fee for the use of its proprietary property. Remember I told you about the Alameda County tax assessor comes up, knocks on my door, says, hey, I want to come in here and look at your dresser and open the drawers and count your socks, and then I want to charge you a fee for it. I thought it was preposterous when I was 23. Oh, no, no, he was exactly right. I was in the wrong. He was simply coming in here to tax that which was the government's property. I didn't own those socks, those shoes. I discharged my obligation in equity. I didn't pay for anything. Now, in later years, I've started paying. Now, I pay for things today. I stopped stealing. I used to steal a lot, and I quit doing that. You don't have to steal. You know, you can pay for things, and you can pay for it with gold and silver coin. That's what we were told to do. Now, further, since Title 12 of the Code provides that Federal Reserve notes are securities of the United States, a trust has been formed in favor of the United States, which can, of course, be assigned by contract or treaty to other and foreign and international institutions, such as the IMF, the World Bank, the United Nations, China, Russia, Indonesia. Honest to God, do you people out there believe that the Chinese and the Japanese and the people around the world are holding all of these U.S. bonds and they're going to take it in the shorts? Do you believe that? That's why they have taken possession now of your parks in the United States. Those were used as collateral. And they're going to take all of these places that you have set aside as wilderness areas that are full of minerals so that they can be paid for those bonds. In the final analysis, they're going to take you, the people of the United States, Canada, and Australia, and you're going to be sold as bond servants and bondsmen and bond women for these debts. That $100 trillion is going to be paid. Guaranteed. Now, you're not going to pay it because you don't have the wherewithal, but when they take you into national captivity, you'll pay it. You'll work it off is what that's going to amount to. And you'll see that in Deuteronomy 28, verse 68. I didn't write it. And as they say down at the Blue Room, read them and weep. Now, it has an interest in our continued subversion of plunder, as do the nations which represent our parentage. We have no American citizenship to speak of which would immunize us against this kind of trickery, treachery, and subversion. Bottom line, Queen Elizabeth has now taken revenge for what we did to King George. Always remember that nice lady with the smile and the wave. Well, we'll tell you more about this as we progress along. It's quite a story. I think you'll be interested as we talk about property and the subject of property in future programs. Now, hang on. I've got to give you a final reminder that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in 120 countries plus daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Hey, I'm out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then.